We'll get more on the Canucks prospects and talk more about the organization with Harmon Dale of The Athletic, who joins us now. Harmon, thank you very much for doing this. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you guys?
We are well, and congratulations on your latest podcast endeavor. I see you got signed this week.
Yeah, really excited about that. It's, you know, with the Canucks conversation guys, David Quadrelli and Chris Faber, obviously Faber being with SportsCenter as well. It was it's always been really seamless with them, and it was a ton of fun to be able to sign on with them.
And we're looking forward to the conversations you have there, and we're looking forward to the one that you're having with us today. Before we get into the Canucks prospects, we're going to ask you the question we've been asking all of our guests today, and it's pretty simple. Which Western Canadian team, and I include the two from Alberta and the one here on the West Coast, which of them has the most pressure this season? What do you think?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think it'd have to be, in my opinion, a toss-up between, ooh, all of them are really close. I think it's, it might be, for my money, it might be Edmonton. And the reason I say that is just because the magnitude of the potential consequences if this season goes sideways. Connor McDavid, and it's pretty crazy to think about because it feels like he just entered the league yesterday, but he's entering his seventh NHL season. And if this year is another bust, you really don't know where that story could be headed and where that frustration could take him and the organization, and especially with Leon Draisaitl. I mean, at some point, he may choose to walk the path of Jack Eichel, whereas I think if you look at the Canucks, yes, this is a very high-stakes season, but if it doesn't pan out, yes, there are going to be grave consequences, but it's not as if Pettersson and Hughes are going to be potentially demanding trades, right? So I think that's the worry if you're Edmonton, is if you have another season without playoff success, where does that leave McDavid and Draisaitl in terms of their frustration level with the organization?
Yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it, Harm. You know, I said Vancouver just because I don't see how the front office can escape, you know, major consequences if they don't live up to expectations this year. But you're right. If you think McDavid is on the precipice of potentially trying to move, I mean, that's kind of the worst case scenario in Edmonton. That would obviously be an absolute disaster. And Calgary's interesting because if they fall flat again, you know, you could say maybe the coach is out, maybe the GM is out, and you're looking at, you know, overhauling the roster for the Flames as well.
Yeah, and the Flames are just caught in such a middle ground where they, you know, for a while when they were through their rebuilding phase, I don't think they properly kind of committed to it. And they've kind of been in that Minnesota Wild type of purgatory where they've consistently been able to field a pretty good team on paper, but it's never been contender quality. And so, you know, they'll pretty consistently make the playoffs, obviously didn't last year, but they don't have postseason success. And obviously as a result of that, they're not getting the type of draft capital that's going to allow them to take the next step either. And so, especially when you look at how aggressive they were last offseason and signing Jacob Markstrom to that long-term deal, same for Chris Tanev, they really kind of pushed their chips into the middle of the table. And, you know, their prospect pool isn't very strong. And yet, again, they're not a contending caliber team. So I think quite clearly now, especially now that they brought in Blake Coleman, like they've committed to the idea of trying to win now. And they've really got to figure this out because, I mean, if they're not going to be able to cash in on, you know, essentially putting their chips into the middle of the table now, well, you look at their prospect pool and lack of talent there. You know, they could be in for a really rough ride with some of these contracts and just overall having to tear it down and rebuild in a few years. Like, this is really their window to win now.
Speaking of prospects, the Canucks rookie camp gets going this week. Not a particularly large roster, as Scotty and I were talking about just before you got on the line, but the name that everyone will be paying the closest attention to is Vasily Podkolzin, the 10th overall pick from a couple years ago. Now, he's obviously expected to be a part of the main roster this year. It's not as if he needs to come into rookie camp and really turn heads to earn his spot, but it is exciting that we get the chance to see Podkolzin in his kind of first official action of any sort with the Vancouver Canucks, not just at rookie camp this week or even in training camp, but looking at this whole year for Podkolzin, what are you kind of most curious to see from him as he makes the transition from the KHL to the NHL?
I'm curious to see how his offensive game translates. It was interesting watching him in the KHL last year because you could clearly see the offensive skill there in terms of his playmaking, in terms of his vision, how he was just able to see the ice and create a lot of scoring chances. But the one thing that kind of stuck out to me was he was kind of situated in a role, bottom 6 minutes, playing alongside Grinders, and you could tell that he was kind of caught in a scenario where he wasn't really allowed to express himself offensively with his creativity, because if he made mistakes, he was immediately going to be stapled to the bench. And from that perspective, I'm coming over to North America, and this is where I've been contrasting his situation to Höglander's, right? Because when Höglander came to the NHL, from day one, he was unafraid to take offensive risks, to take a defender on one-on-one at the offensive blue line, to try and thread the needle with a pass across the seam. And with Podkolzin, it's been different because he's had to play a lot safer in the KHL, just because if he made any mistakes or made a turnover, he wouldn't get those minutes. So now coming over to Vancouver, I'm going to be fascinated to see if there are enough dynamic elements to his game for him to kind of stick as a productive top six piece. I'm obviously not expecting him to drive the bus, but it's going to be curious. I'm curious to see if there are going to be enough qualities in him as a digger, as someone who can retrieve pucks, as someone who can work off the cycle, really excel in a small area game, to stick in the top six, or whether he's going to have to kind of take a slower path where he starts on a third or fourth line, more likely a third line, and kind of just more gradually works his way up, kind of similar maybe to how Bo Horvat progressed, where you could tell when Horvat first came into the NHL that it took him time to gain that confidence to express himself offensively. So I'm going to be curious to kind of watch that for Podkolzin.
Harmon Dial of The Athletic joining us here today, talking Canucks ahead of prospect camp, which gets going tomorrow. And then we're just a little over a week away from main camp getting going with the Vancouver Canucks. Podkolzin is obviously the apple of everybody's eye. He's the most interesting prospect at camp for very understandable reasons. What about Jet Wu? He's one of three defensemen at this camp. In your estimation, what does a successful season look like in professional hockey for Jet Wu this year?
I think with Jet Wu, it's just now he's had the first taste of American League action last year in, I think, what was probably a watered-down AHL kind of, just league quality because of the taxi squad setup and how many of the top AHL players were, joining NHL kind of squads there. So, with a higher and improved AHL, it would be great, I think, if Jet Wu could now just take the next step and become an impact top four all situations D. I mean, he kind of got a taste of that last year where he got a little bit of power play, he was spending time with the PK, played 5-on-5 minutes with Jack Rathbone. But now I think if he could be more assertive and be a leader on that blue line, some of the coaching staff can count on, particularly to say close out leads and just be the go-to kind of one of the go-to defenders, especially on an Abbotsford team that's already deep. I think that would constitute a step in the right direction for him. I think with Jet Wu, it was interesting because I think for a long time, the organization has expected that he'd be a longer-term project, and I still think that's the direction he's trending in. But last season, I think he definitely opened some eyes, especially starting at camp with the way that he didn't look out of place at all in terms of his pace and how he was able to kind of separate players from puck. And similarly, down in the minors, he really seemed to hold his own. And so now I think it's, he proved that he can stick in the AHL and be an effective player. Now it's about, hey, can you be a high-end player and be one of the leaders on that blue line? And I think that would really be an encouraging sign if he'd be able to take that kind of step.
Well, and I'm sure that in his mind, he'd love to be an option at some point this season for Travis Green and Nolan Baumgartner and Brad Shaw and the proximity of the AHL club and all of that. Just before we get back to prospect camp, we've talked about, okay, the skaters up front are stronger. mixed reaction on the blue line and mixed opinion on whether they're better there. Everybody's cool with Thatcher Demko and the goaltending situation with bringing in Halak. Overall, how much more flexible is the Canucks organization in terms of the options it provides Travis Green this season than what he has had in previous incarnations?
Very. And it starts obviously with the forward group and not just the level of depth that they have in terms of now they've got enough high-end offensive weapons to build three lines that can score. But it's also the number of players that can play multiple positions. You look at players like Höglander and Podkolzin and Garland. They can play both wings. Dickinson can play center or wing. Miller can play wing or center. It just gives the coaching staff an unbelievable number of potential combinations that they could try. And that's what coaches love, and especially someone who's as matchup-oriented as Travis Green is. It's been very fascinating because when you look at a lot of the underlying numbers over the last couple of seasons and how Green's deployed his players, it's tough to find another coach in the NHL who's more extreme and more particular with how he sort of sends players against different matchups. And what I mean by that is, for instance, like Bo Horvat, that was Vancouver's de facto shutdown line, and that was essentially the 95th or 99th, almost 99th percentile in terms of the percentage of ice time that they spent against elite competition. And then you'd look at, for instance, the players that were sheltered, like an Adam Gaudette. They were among the most sheltered players in the NHL, meaning that Green really seems to place an emphasis on playing that kind of matchup game. And so now having all these options at his disposal, it gives him so many options, especially in a full season. You know, injuries are going to happen, especially as the Canucks return to their regular, rigorous travel schedule. So I think that's going to be crucial. The overall level of organizational depth that they've added, even with Abbotsford, you put it all together and there are obviously going to be some challenges, especially on the back end, but there's no question with respect to at least the coaching staff's going to have a lot of options.
Back to the rookie camp here, Harmon, and Podkolzin, yeah, he's number one, but a lot of people are going to be really interested to see the Canucks' most recent second-round pick, Danila Klimovich, in action as well. We've heard Jim Benning say, okay, he's probably going to go to the QMJHL this year and play his hockey there. And I know, going into your draft plus one season in major junior hockey, a lot of fans are going to expect him to dominate and put up a ton of points in that league. What do you think are fair expectations for Klimovich as he makes the transition to North American hockey, playing probably in a junior league this year?
Yeah, I mean, if he's playing in the Q, dominance is really what you'd be hoping and expecting for. Maybe a little bit of a transitory period at the start of the season. Maybe it takes him a little bit of time to acclimate himself to the smaller rink size and everything. But this is a player that at the U18 level against his peers, showed really, really well. And I think that's, when you talk about his perception around the league as a draft prospect, that's when his stock really started to climb. So he's proven that against players his own age that he can really produce. And so coming over to the QMJHL, I think what many of us believe is the highest scoring of the three CHL leagues. You'd expect him to be a leader for that Huskies team and someone who plays top line minutes, plays PP1, and can really, I think, aside from just the on ice perspective of scoring, I think what you'd be hoping for is for him to start to really learn how to play more of a professional style of game. And what I kind of mean by that is when you watched him, whether it was in the Belarusian League or even, in the U18s, for all that he did good, there were, I think, elements of Klimovich's game. When you'd look at, for instance, how many plays he one-on-one rushes he'd force, and sometimes, having that tunnel vision and trying to do too much. Sometimes the element of getting frustrated a lot and kind of doing the JT Miller where he'd be slamming a stick and barking at teammates. So I think just expecting a more mature pro style of game, even if it is at the junior level, is something that you'd hope for him as well, where you not only want him to be a leader in terms of the offensive production, but leader kind of off the ice and kind of developing that maturity as well, so that he becomes a more responsible player, just with things like puck management, because we know the offensive package is there just now about, I think, not only producing, but rounding out his arsenal.
So outside of the headliners that are going to be at rookie camp, like Podkolzin, like Klimovich, like Jet Wu as well, is there a guy maybe a little bit more under the radar that you're really excited to get a closer look at here?
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see Victor Persson. He was obviously a seventh round, I believe, pick for the Canucks in the 2020 draft. And he's had, when I watched tape of him, intriguing skills with how he likes to jump up in the rush. He's a mobile right-handed defenseman. He's got some decent size to him. And when you kind of look at Vancouver's organizational needs moving forward, any right shot defenseman that they have is really critical if they can hit. And, you know, he was unfortunately in a tough spot last year where the J20 league shut down midseason because of the COVID situation. So it was tough to really get much of a look at him last year. And so coming into this season, he's going to play for the Blazers in the WHL. So we're going to get a much closer look at him, and just being able to see him at rookie camp. And I think it's going to be fascinating to project where his game is at. Obviously, he's going to be a long shot if he ever does make it to the NHL, or a long-term project. He's not someone who you expect to be ready anytime soon, but just being able to get a gauge on his skill set and how that could kind of translate to North American ice, especially, again, 6'2", almost 200 pounds. You have a guy like that can skate as well as he does, that can move the puck as well as he does, that's a good passer. He's definitely intriguing to me, as well as Connor Lockhart. I mean, as a sixth-round pick last year, his stock fell mostly because he didn't really get a shot to play last year because of the OHL not running. But you look at Lockhart and his high offensive skill and the pedigree, and this is a player who many expected could have been a pick within the first two or three rounds if it weren't for the OHL league shutting down. So I think he was one of the Canucks' best bang for buck selections at the draft this past year. So seeing Lockhart, seeing Persson, I think those are two of the players that I'm most excited to see aside from the main names.
Well, you can do a good bit in the stands with Persson. Who are you here to see? Persson. Yeah, I know which one. Persson. No, the player. Like, you can work on that, Harmon. We can incorporate that into your game. We can have a little fun with that. Pressing question of the week. We have to know, where do you come out on Taco Tuesday? Is taco salad acceptable on Taco Tuesday, or does it have to be the traditional taco that you hold in your hand?
I think it has to be the traditional taco where you hold it in your hand.
Thank you. Thank you, Harm.
It's unfortunate you're not more inclusive, Harm, and it's really, really disappointing that you're not more inclusive. I would have thought that someone with a global mind like your own would have thought differently, but that's okay. We all have things to work on.
I'm sorry, I'm a little bit elitist when it comes to tacos.
I'd like you to reconsider that throughout the rest of the day. All right, buddy, thank you very much for your time. We look forward to doing it again soon.
Thanks for having me.